Hi and welcome to another episode of ICT You Can. This is Jane Nichols and today is Thursday, the 25th of January 2007. It's another rainy day here in sunny, summery Dunedin, but the view more than makes up for the weather. In this episode, I'm podcasting the Skype conversation I had with two teachers who are leading the charge in using podcasting and other technologies in their classroom. Alana King from Appleby School in Nelson, New Zealand, has a wonderful podcast and classroom blog, and she has linked up with Paul Harrington from Cefn Forest in Wales, and together these two very innovative teachers have been getting their students to have Skype conversations with each other. They've sent a cuddly bear with geocaching technology from Wales to New Zealand, where they've been taking photos and blogging and podcasting about the bear's adventures. And the New Zealand school sent the Wales school a cuddly kiwi. So they've been blogging and podcasting about their stuffed toys adventures. These two teachers were so passionate and excited about the things that have been going on in their classroom and the learning that's been happening, because they can link outside of their small sphere of knowledge. These students now know that there are students in another country, in another time zone, where it's day for them, it's night for their buddies. This is all really important learning that before these technologies was really hard and superficial to achieve. So here is our Skype conversation talking about our passion, our enjoyment in being able to use these technologies in the classroom. I hope you enjoy.
Hello.
Hello, may I introduce you, Jane?
Hi, Paul.
Jane, this is Paul. Paul, this is Jane.
Hi, how are you, Jane?
Good, thank you. Nice to
meet
you.
So, Jane is in Dunedin, yes?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Down in the south of the South Island.
Oh, cold a bit then.
Well, it's supposed to be summer and the sun is shining today, but this isn't really what I'd call summer. And you're in Wales, Paul.
Well, it's about -1, -2 at the moment. We're getting a very cold night tonight, so very frosty morning, I think, tomorrow morning for us.
Now, Jane has a year off. Year off?
I do.
A year off to tell Paul about it.
I've got a year, an e-fellowship from the Ministry of Education to look into the use of social software and its effect on literacy learning. So I'm really interested to hear how teachers have been, and podcasts and wikis and things, to help their children learn how to speak, you know, read and write.
That sounds like a good idea. I could do one of those.
I could do one of those.
Have a nice year off. I could do. It'd be nice to do that and not do all the other stuff, but then you wouldn't get to be with the kids all the time, I guess.
Well, that's the hard thing. I'm really doing it hard because I keep thinking, it's how can I research this but have a year without kids? Because I'm going to find all these great ideas, like just listening to Alana about the things that you guys have been doing. I want to go and try it now, but I don't have a class for a year. So...
I think one of my funniest things happened with the podcast. You go back and listen to it. It's one of our podcasts was called Skype Podcast with a Welsh Teacher. And Gloria asked Paul, what's your favourite thing that you teach? Your favourite subject, I think, was the question. And Gloria was looking for something exciting, like playing on the computer or something. And Paul said, teaching literacy. And Gloria said...
I could hear the sense of deflation the other end. It was terrible. It was tangible.
It was. I just had tears in my eyes. This Gloria couldn't hear what I was laughing about. All she said was "oh," but there's a voice that said, "K, can't you think of something more exciting to teach than literacy?
Yeah, yeah. That was slightly tongue-in-cheek. The IT stuff's okay, but every now and again it gets a bit on top of you. You just have to have a bit of a break from it.
Indeed.
It sort of goes in waves.
You've got to have a lot of energy to keep it up.
That is the only thing. I don't know how Lana gets all her energy, because she's searching things and finding stuff all the time, which I find quite difficult this end, because it is hard. It's hard to keep the day job up and keep the other stuff going as well. I don't know how you do it, Lana.
I don't know how you do it either, because I think that we feed off each other slightly too.
And it bounces off the community. There's a very, very good community within the new technology side as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the fact that it's global is really good. And they're all, everybody's so positive about other people's efforts as well.
I was just thinking that the great thing about things like Skype and that is that people like us, I'm in Dunedin, Alana's up the other end of New Zealand, and you're in Wales. We've got the same passion. And we couldn't find people around where we are for face-to-face to support each other. But here we can go around the world to find someone with the same interest to support us.
Yeah. Well, I know I did the same thing here, because a while back when I started all this, back in, I suppose it was June time last year, I put some feelers out here for people within Wales that might be interested.
As Paul says, the possibilities there are endless,
mm-hmm.
and that you can talk to the people who are making decisions and making policy and making the leaders in the field, rather than hearing somebody who's heard somebody else because the principal went to a course and it might be quite good. You can be in contact with people directly,
mm-hmm.
rather than through other people, which I think is really valuable as well,
That's good. The one I've got at this end is Terry Friedman. Terry is online on Skype most evenings, and he quite often just drops a hiya across and we just have a little chat. Now, Terry, I would never come in contact with Terry. He's the chairman of NACE, which is the national computing organization based up in London. I would never meet him. But we have a chat, and he knows who I am, and I know he is. And I nearly bumped into him at the big computer show up in London in January. He was off visiting somewhere else. He Skyped me later on saying, why didn't he leave me a phone? And I would have phoned you. And it's those sort of things where you just meet these people, and they want to know what you're doing, basically, and they want to know how it can be made better. And that's so you've got an input into what's going on as well.
I had one of those moments. I was sitting in a conference, and the keynote speaker was talking about podcasting, and he was asking questions out into the audience, and I was answering them, and the woman in the row in front of me was answering.
In the front row.
And I know, you who podcasts, yeah. But anyway,
sat at the front row.
And this woman, after we'd sort of been, answering these questions, she turned around and looked at me, and it was someone that I'd had an online conversation with many, many times, but had never met in person. And she said, "You're Jane." I went, "It's you." And it was so funny. It was like, I've known this woman for a year and a half online, and there she was, and we didn't even know each other. So it's pretty cool. In the flesh, yes.
Yeah, I think the other thing that happens, I think our enthusiasm for it grabs the kids as well. I know with Alana's lot, they're into blogging, and they can teach teachers how to do it, can't they, Alana? I've got a group of year sixes I was working with this evening, actually. We finished at 4:30 to a podcasting club, and there are a couple of those that have actually gone to the trouble of getting Audacity on their computers at home. So they do their some recording at home, put it on their data sticks, come into school, re-edit it when they get in. And there was a teaching colleague of mine in there going, what are they doing? I said, well, they're re-editing work they've actually recorded at home and redoing it and putting it on for me to link it together and make a whole podcast with the lot. It was absolutely gobsmacked. The kids were just tapping away, and they were oblivious to everything else that was going on around them.
I think some of the hype that people give about digital natives is maybe secondary school type students, because at the primary school, you know, they're still learning it very much too, and they haven't got Bebo accounts and stuff, you know, because they're, they're too young for it.
I don't really, I don't really agree with that digital natives and digital immigrants either. In the wide range of the of its use, because I'm like, I think I'm a native myself, but I'm too old to actually be a native. Yes. I think it's
Well, I'm nearly 50, you know.
There's us old natives as well. I don't know what they call us, wrinkly natives, I guess.
But the thing is, I think it's got to do with maybe learning styles or those sorts of things. The way that your preferred way of learning, and for me, technology is my preferred way of learning and of presenting my learning. Whereas there are still students who their preferred way of learning is very physical and very, you know, dramatic, and and this, it doesn't have to fit everyone. Mind you, you can then go and video them and put them online. So, but anyway, there's a way around it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's again, a lot of the stuff that we podcast do, because mine are year threes, they're only seven. They're very much just getting to the junior way of working with us, and they're not really the sort that would go off and do stuff on their own. So a lot of it has been prompted and getting them going. Once they do get it, though, it works. I've got my last year's group of year threes, who were the ones I started podcasting with first. They only did about two podcasts that they put together with my help, but they did the individual elements. Now they're a year older, and they keep badgering me saying, "Can we do some more?" And it's not until they get a bit older they get a bit more. There aren't any more hours in the day.
Paul, can I ask how you first got involved in podcasting? How did it all start for you?
Well, it's something I wanted to do for ages because I could see the potential of it. I saw lots of school stuff, where, particularly over here, a school called the Downs School, which is in Kent. And they've been doing podcasts, radio programs, for quite a while, for about 2 or 3 years. And I kept dipping into it and saying, well, I could see the potential, even not necessarily for straight radio broadcasts, but for things like doing a history project and doing history news, or doing something of that sort, using it in the curriculum more. But the thing that got me down was the fact that everywhere I turned, it was, could you do the RSS stuff? And it stopped me for about 4, 5, possibly 6 months, because the only way you could do it then was to understand this really simple syndication, which, as far as I was concerned, was gobbledygook. I couldn't understand it at all.
Like under the boot of a car, pretty much.
Yeah, all these other people used to be thinking, it's easy, you just do this and you put these in this HTML code. And I thought, well, I can't, sorry, that's beyond me. I don't want to do that. I want something that will just work. And it so happened that it was purely by luck. I was being a boring teacher. I was watching, we've got something called Teachers TV over here. Yeah? Mm-hmm. It's broadcast on digital television, and it's for boring teachers to watch in schools outside teaching time. And I was watching it in the summer, and there was one tiny little program, 15-minute program on podcasting, and I was watching it thinking, yeah, great, oh good, they're going to do the RSS feed. And suddenly they loaded the stuff up to Podomatic, and I was off, because once I found Podomatic and found how easy it was just to record the stuff. And you didn't have to know the RSS stuff. You could just find it, browse it, find it, upload it, and it was there. And I thought, ka-ching, that's what I'd be looking for. And that must have been in about May time, I guess, last year, when I started with that first group of year threes. And it wasn't until that hurdle had got over that I could actually get going. And then, from then, it's grown. So. If we hadn't had sites like Podomatic and, what's the other one, Odeo, and a couple of the others, I think it would have been still very much a case of people fumbling along. And the experts seeming to know how to do it.
Ah, so that's fantastic.
That's how I started.
And then you stumbled across Alana, and then podcasting became conversation.
Can you remember it actually started a lot, because I can't. I think we just left comments on each other's podcast.
Maybe I wrote a comment on your podcast, or you wrote a comment on mine or something.
Yeah. It came literally from that, a couple of comments going back and forth, and then sort of, it just seemed to happen somehow, and the Skype stuff came in.
Getting a comment on a blog post or a podcast is just Excellent, because how much do you think you're the only person in the world who's actually doing this?
Mm-hmm.
And you and your kids in your class know about it. But for somebody else to actually make a comment, it's excellent to know it's not just you.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be a big one. I just, you know, that was great, or I'm your dad, or I listened to that. It keeps me going for a couple of months or something like that.
No, what inspired mine at the beginning was they had a comment from a guy in the States called Mr. Homerton. I think he's a Podomatic one, and he does stories. And he'd left a comment on, and they forever think anybody that came to the door that was strange, it's either that guy from Florida. I said, it's very unlikely he'd come and visit us. But he left the comments, and that sort of got them fired up to want to do something. They wanted to do some more because they had that comment.
I think you have too, Paul, a map in the classroom. And any time somebody leaves a comment, there's a string and a pin goes on the map to say where in the world you are.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really cool too, because the kids then have an audience. They say, like, who is our audience? Why are we doing this? Is it just for us? Or is it just for you? Is it for your parents? Or, you know, for Wales or for wherever, you know? Mm. So the kids know it's not just them. And they raise their game, because sort of, like, on the last day of school, I thought, I don't want to drop off our readership over the holidays because everybody will get up and go home. So I got the kids, we do poetry once a week, and I got the kids saying, okay, go outside for half an hour and get a poem and practice it and come back inside and read it. And we just whacked them through. Everybody else was outside yelling and screaming. You can hear them in the background. And three or four or five at a time came in and quickly just recorded their poem. One take, basically, because it was the end of last day that I had everything for my mind. I sort of worked them up into a podcast. The reason for the quality had photos and stuff myself. But there's one there called Fireworks. And it's the boys decided they would do their own sound effects as well. And they did the sounds of the fireworks. And they're really sort of getting the idea that rather than just saying the words of the poem, they're going to add their own piece to it. And I thought it was excellent because it did really well with that one.
So what sort of stuff have you been doing in your cluster, Jane?
Well, with the ICT cluster, we're trying to, you know, you're very privileged. You get to have a look into classrooms, and I've got 11 schools, and I go around into people's classrooms and see what's there. And then it's just like teaching, you assess what they need to move forward. And it sounds so conceited, doesn't it, that I would know what these people need. And it's really hard to get over that. You sort of walk in, you say, well, I'm not telling people what they need to do. I'm telling them the benefit of all my research and study and learning, that these are cool things you could try. And it's basically about changing pedagogy before you can introduce computers. Because nobody who still has children in rows and wants to stand at the front is going to be able to effectively use computers or technology in the classroom.
No. So, and getting over the fact that it's not teacher as teacher, but teacher as learner as well.
Yeah, and that you might not have the answer.
No, I mean, it happens. You're sitting there and somebody wants to know how to do something, and I don't know how to do it, and we have to go work towards it together to work out how we can overcome the problem that neither of us knew before, and that happens quite a lot.
Yeah, and it's changing the conversations that happen in the classroom. I love this one time I was doing web design with my class, and my principal walked in, and these kids had a problem with this web page I'm building, and they're going, oh, let's ask, oh no, let's just work it out because he won't know. And I thought, I loved that. This is great.
We don't tell them, isn't it?
Isn't it? We don't have to have all the knowledge in our heads. You know.
Do you remember when the kids are having a conversation on the telephone on the Skype cast with you, and my head teacher walked in? And he was totally perplexed. He didn't
know. He was scared. I could tell he was scared of his voice.
He was absolutely. The kids were quite happily chatting away, and he came in and he had to speak. He was totally and utterly flabbergasted. You know what to say.
I think he wanted to get out of there as fast as he possibly could.
Oh yes, it works. He keeps away from me.
Once you get over that fear factor, like I can put a new program in front of kids in my class and say, right, here it is. I've heard it's good. I don't exactly know all that it can do yet, but let's find out. And the kids just run with the fact that you're not the expert and that they could possibly become the expert in that program. And that's a real motivator.
Even the simplest of things that you think that you know, because you've always done it this way, like we were on the web, as you do, and we wanted to download a picture, as we do. And I was busy saying, you right click here and you go to here, and then some little cherub said, why don't you just drag on the desktop? I said, what? I had always done the right mouse thing, save it on the thing, and I was like, okay, so this is a much better way. Just because you're a little smart thing and you found it out by mistake, trial and error. But it was neat. I was like, okay, take over the mouse. Here you are at the scene with the data deck and show everybody else. That's great. We all do it now.
I think the point with that as well is that will help, because the thing that's the problem with ICT teaching a lot of the time is people are so petrified standing up there because they're only just ahead of where the kids are in practicing the program, working out how it works. If you get used to the fact that you just don't know and you're just actually going to go and find out with them, you don't have to be steps ahead. And getting that over to people is quite difficult. And
it's not a power play, again, is it?
They come to you then and they say, well, you know how to do it, tell me. And I say, well, I found out because trial and error, just tried it and the kids tried it and we made mistakes and that's how we did it. And then you don't mind showing, you know, you can do almost anything then, it doesn't matter. And that's a really difficult one to get over to, certainly younger staff that haven't been in a school maybe very long, the fact that they have to give some of the ownership of that to the kids. They can't always be the fount of all knowledge at the front. It doesn't work.
And I think also it's about not seeing the technology as what you're teaching. You're not teaching them how to use Audacity. You're using that program for the the deeper, meaningful things that you are teaching. It's just an avenue or a tool, or it's a way to do something. Yeah. And as soon as that, the technology goes in the background, the learning is amazing.
Well, I haven't actually done, apart from one or two people, shown my school colleagues podcasting much yet, because I don't think some of them, it would be too much. It would be something that would make them feel pressured again. And I don't want to do that. I'd rather it be with a small group of people that are maybe interested that will do it and have a go and realise that, oh, it's quite fun, you can do this, that and the other, and they'll probably come up with new ways other than me. So it's a real difficult one to push forward slowly and not try and steamroll it in so people feel, oh dear, I can't do it, I'm very insecure. And it has a negative effect then, and they won't do something because it just seems too difficult. And it's trying to make a positive atmosphere so that they know what's going on, but without feeling that they necessarily have to be doing it all the time. They can pick it up when they're ready, whatever stage of development they are as teachers as well.
Well, thank you for organising this, Alana.
Thank you.
I'll talk to you all later.
Thanks a lot, Alana.
Yeah, I'll see you later.
I'm going to go off. I'm going to have to do my application forms now.
Here's some lunch.